Good evening, everybody. Oh, I came in a little strong there. I'm sorry, but it's been a couple weeks, so I'm kind of out of practice. We took a week off. I was really trying to make it till next week, but I was really burning out. And my activist comrades know what that's like. So we kind of just called off the show last week, last minute. I apologize to those of you that tune in every Wednesday, whether it be tuning in on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or on Spotify or iTunes or Google Play or on the web or wherever else you find New Jersey Revolution Radio. I thank you. You can donate to us on the web, www.njrevolutionradio.com. And we appreciate every dollar. It really matters. It means that we have gas money and transportation and the ability to get out to a few more protests. And when we don't have the donations coming in, we don't get out as much. And when they do come in, we get out and we report more and we report better. So we appreciate that. And if you can make a contribution, and if I could ask our show writer, Leah, to make sure that that donation link comes up in the comments. She's just one of the very, very few hardworking staff that will put up with being here at New Jersey Revolution Radio every week and dealing with me. So we have to show her the appreciation of making sure that she's compensated for her labor. And speaking of labor, I want to thank my co-host over the last few weeks. And I want to apologize to her for canceling because I was burning out. But she is an activist herself. Lark is here. And I wanted to really thank you very much and just remind everybody that, you know, the people that do New Jersey Revolution Radio, we don't get paid at all. I mean, you know, we're the activists. We not only come here on live streams and through media and stuff. And Lark has that DIY entertainment background that I really inspired me, like, kind of to start, as I noted when you first came on, Lark. But you know, you also organize behind the scenes. I mean, you've been involved with a lot of different revolutionary organizations. You've spoken at Left Forum. You know, you've done things with the revolutionary left that feed into your ability to be such a great voice for activism and for all these different causes. And tonight we're really going to key in on like your expertise and you know, something that's near and dear to your heart. I know, because we have a personal relationship and a friendship, that this isn't a fake for you. I mean, this is really something that you've dedicated your life to. So I can't wait to hear you and our guest tonight, Jessica Clayton, discuss a little bit. But I do want to thank, you know, start off just the show by thanking you so much for, you know, spending a month here at New Jersey Revolution Radio and being my co-host. Welcome back.
Yeah, no problem. And thank you for having me here and giving, you know, informing New Jersey the way you do, because unfortunately, New Jersey has a lack of media. It's like you guys are just, you know, essentially like New York, a suburb of New York instead of your own city and state, which is, you guys actually are an actual state, a very big state if you are next to New York.
Know, this is why we can only work together for a month. New Jersey is expanding. Y'all, it's like, you know, we're stockpiling resources right now. I don't want to let everybody know, because nobody really watches outside New Jersey. I don't think you're allowed to. But I'm just telling you that, like, you know, we're just getting ready to expand. Y'all think we're just like stuck in the middle. You know, Sun Tzu taught us, right? When you're big, act small. And when you're small, act big. Mm-hmm. Y'all don't know.
So we're going to act. So what are we acting, big or small? I'm not sure what that means right now.
He's making fun of New Jersey for being there. You're going to run me off to the rest of the country.
You guys are wonderful.
I'm happy here.
Yes, I know.
Are you not?
Well, you know what? It's a place, and places are good. Could it be no place? If you, you know, we don't have places, we'd be no place. I'd be no place. And I'm definitely someplace.
Thank you very much. Let's bring in Christian. Let's bring in somebody from New Jersey to join us.
Yeah.
Christian Perez from Modernity and Absurdity Podcast. You can find him. He's a little tagline there if you're listening on there, is at Perez Podcast. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Doing okay. Proud son of New Jersey over here. And shout out for the Sun Tzu reference. I love it.
That's one interpretation of it. I think there's a couple of them, you know, like if your enemy thinks you're weak, act strong. There's different interpretations of it, but that was
best victory is one where you don't have to lose any troops. Try to take people out. Anyone interested, there's a great writer named Robert Greene who wrote a book He's a classics professor, I think, at Columbia. He wrote a book, Art of Seduction, Art of War, a couple books like along that vein. So if anybody's a fan of Sun Tzu or anything like that, check it out. You know me, I always got book ideas.
It does. I mean, Sun Tzu is kind of like required reading for life at this point, isn't it? I mean, it's so...
Graduate school, I had to read them. You know, Thucydides, Sun Tzu, there's some classics you have to read.
What was the first one? I didn't hear. You broke up a little bit.
Thucydides. Thucydides was really popular, particularly during the Cold War, because he described the war between Sparta and Athens as two regional powers. And if you looked at it during the Cold War, it was the same thing. You had two powers fighting over territory and, you know, the conflict that ensued and how it kind of sucked everybody else into that conflict. So any history or political science fans out there, if you're going to study it seriously, you got to read Thucydides, History of the Peloponnesian War.
There is no doubt that I'm the dumbest one on the show tonight.
No,
it's okay.
My role today is not that important, so I don't have to be that smart. It's okay. There's a place for us. There's a place for us. Don't worry about it. We can hang around. I can push buttons and put links and do things.
We love you, Brian.
Thank you. Love you all back. So there's some seriousness going on in the world. And as we bring you in, we do have to downshift a little bit from celebrating because, you know, there's some seriousness going on in the world. And we're going to talk about, of course, child care issues. And the beginning music, by the way, anytime anybody sings about your mother or your father, I always get choked up. So I wanted to thank Infinite Skills, of course, for lending us his
music. It was a good song.
Music. He got a great tune. I hope I just kind of play around with his Spotify. He's got a bunch of stuff on Spotify. So check him out. It's right there on the bottom. It's Skills with a Z on the end of it. Check him out on Spotify. I know. And I don't know where else he might be found on the web. I'm sure if you Google him, but he's really a great artist. And I would like him to kind of run DMC, man. He's got that positive messaging going and I enjoy it. But anyway, we do have to downshift a little bit though.
Yeah.
And talk about Portland because you know, the center of revolutionary activity seems to be Portland. It shifted a little. I mean,
that area has a lot of different interests in it. Like in the cities, in Portland, in Seattle. I mean, you're seeing a lot of, I mean, Seattle's where they had the protests back in the 90s, the anti-globalization protests. So for the United States, Seattle and the Pacific Northwest have always kind of been a hotbed for us. Same thing goes with Portland. What's crazy and what kind of makes this whole situation going on in Portland, Trump sending Department of Homeland Security, I don't know what they are, soldiers, officers, whatever, agents there without markings in enterprise rent-a-vans to detain Americans. So I think, I guess just jumping into it, there was a couple of things I wanted to say, but I think the most alarming part about it is not only is it a violation of our rights, not only is it technically illegal for them to take, because we don't know, are these people arrested? Like we don't know what happens when they come and take them. But the scary thing is, and a lot of people don't realize this, when they think the Pacific Northwest, they think Portland, they think Seattle, they think liberals and socialists and kumbaya. But right outside in the wooded areas are a lot of white supremacist groups, and they have been there for generations. Lots of white supremacists, militia members, survivalists, Second Amendment types, all those people are in that area. And what makes it scary is they like to dress up and play soldier, and they dress the same way as these unmarked DHS agents. So if you're in the Pacific Northwest, or if you're in Chicago or New York, where Trump is talking about maybe sending these people there, how do you know? How do you know that you're being taken by somebody from the Department of Homeland Security and not a white supremacist in cosplay? Especially if they're not answering questions, because I don't know if you saw the video. There's people asking, what is your name? Where are you from? And they don't say anything. Yeah. So you're getting in a car with some dudes with guns who say that they're cops, but that's all. They don't even say it. It's written on their shirt. So we honestly don't even know. And that is incredibly, incredibly scary.
Well, Christian, I have a question in regards to this situation. And we look at the defund the police situation in regards to local. Do you feel as if this may be the future of policing? So we won't have a public, we'll have a private force that just does what they want. I mean, think about, I don't know what the ramifications, but what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I don't know where it's going to go moving forward. I think you can expect to see a drop in policing in some cities like your Seattle's in Portland. We know that the Democratic Party nationally is not in favor of that. They really like tearing down statues and painting murals, but in terms of actual substantial change, systemic change, we're not really seeing that. We have to wait and see. It's going to depend what cities you're in, what kind of democratic or hopefully anti-capitalist, non-democratic leadership are in these cities to see what's going to happen. If you are in a more affluent society or community, I don't see there not being police. Mm-hmm. That being said, yeah, they would just hire private security. I mean, and that's problematic because who the hell is private security, right? You're just a dude with a gun.
Well, I felt the same way in regards to the, remember when we were having the conversation about cameras on the police, like, oh, the police should have cameras. But now it turns out that it's not really helping. It's actually hurting people because now they're filming people. And I don't know your thoughts on that. But I mean
the whole thing with cameras were supposed to protect the police.
Yeah.
Right. Because we're supposed to live in a world where the cops are good. So when the cops beat these people up, it's because they're bad and they're lying and the cops are really good guys. And we have these cameras to protect the cops from these naughty, naughty thugs out there. But in reality, we know that there's no repercussions for police violence. Mm-hmm. We know that you know, there's a civil asset forfeiture. They can hide police officers' names from reports. There's people who are more articulate in this area than I am. But in reality, we know the police aren't suffering any consequences. So cameras, no cameras, what does it matter? If a police officer beats up a kid, he gets sent to another district or he gets suspended with pay. But we see these guys, they'll beat up some black kid or they lose their job, but then they get to keep their pension anyway. So where is the punishment? Mm-hmm. How do we hold these people accountable? So cameras, again, are a concession, but it's not holding these people accountable. And that's the problem, is particularly when you're dealing with leadership from conservatives, from liberals. They like to make changes, but it's always baby steps, if anything, with these people. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say tearing down a statue is bad. Tear them all down. I'm not saying painting Black Lives Matter murals is bad. Paint them everywhere. I'm saying if that's all we're going to do, that's not enough. We need to really address police violence, systemic racism in this country. And with the current guy we have in office, it's not going to happen. It's off the table currently.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to combine this scary situation with a quote I heard, and I'd love to say what the quote, where the quote came from, but I was just listening on a podcast or something earlier saying that, a quote from our good president there saying that he was very pleased with what was going on in Portland. The federal response was positive and that he planned on replicating in other cities. And then a couple hours later, I came across this article here where Trump is sending federal forces to Chicago and other cities, I think like Albuquerque and other
sending them places to a lot of Democratic
under a program called Operation Legend. And in this article, it's described as a surge.
Okay. So let me just say this.
There you go.
If you think about COVID-19 in the United States, there is nothing the federal government can do for you. If there is a lack of respirators, ventilators, personal protective equipment, masks, any of that stuff, Donald Trump said there is nothing the federal government can do for you. Resources are totally left up to states. However, if somebody graffitis a statue, and if somebody makes fun of Christopher Columbus, Trump is not afraid to send in the Gestapo, right? So 140,000 dead Americans, peanuts. Tearing down a statue of Columbus, send in the Gestapo. I mean, I don't want to laugh about it, but like you have to laugh because if you don't laugh, you get upset. And I get a lot of anxiety researching this stuff every day. This is daily anxiety I deal with.
Yeah, man.
Ignorance, the hypocrisy, the lies. It's my entire adult life. And if I don't laugh at it, pulling my hair out. I mean, it's grotesque. Every time you think this country can't get any worse, anytime you think Donald Trump can't even get worse as a leader, it just goes lower. Right, 140,000 dead Americans. Peanuts, right? The people who complain, who say wearing a mask is tyranny. Remember, 2 weeks ago, people were complaining about wearing masks. That's tyranny. Wearing a mask is tyranny. Not being able to get your hair done is tyranny. Not being able to go to your gym is tyranny. Police locking people up without explanation, without warning, without any kind of due process, that's okay. I mean, I've been saying it every time I come on this show. 2020 has exposed everyone for who they are, whether it's LGBT organizations coming out to support Pete Buttigieg for president, whether it's Elizabeth Warren doing absolutely nothing and not saying anything during her presidential campaign, or whether it's once again the alt-right conservatives or the neo-fascists in this country showing their hypocrisy. 2020 has revealed everyone for who they really are. We are at a crucial moment here where there's no sitting on the fence. If you're hemming and hawing right now, you are a threat to American democracy. And that's what we're dealing with now. And I don't like being an alarmist, and you know I'm the conspiracy theory guy, but
it's not a conspiracy. It's actually happening. You got $100, you know, they want to lower unemployment to $100 a month. Like they actually suggested, and $100 a week. Okay. I'm sorry. I gave them too much credit. $100 a week. I think I'm going to say this one thing. I'm going to let you go on. But I think about how they've given the feds gave $10 trillion to Wall Street in the last 9 months. Bezos made
$13 billion in a day last week.
Yeah, and they could have given us $3.1 trillion of people, and we could have stayed home every day. Could have got $2,000 and could have stayed home for a year. Every household.
Again, you see a poor, authoritarian, communist country like Cuba or Vietnam. Vietnam has had zero deaths. Cuba's medical team, their doctors, are being nominated for a Nobel Prize, right? But they're the evil communists. They're the ones who are a threat to freedom, a threat to health, a threat to democracy. They're the ones with the bread lines and the substandard healthcare. We have 140,000 dead Americans. Where are the Benghazi people? Where are the 9/11 people? Yeah.
They're the pandemic people. They're the people that say the virus ain't happening and it's not real and the masks are.
Well, even Trump's wearing a mask now. So it's been a hoax for 4 months. It's been a hoax for 4 months. What was that?
Everything's a hoax. Donald Trump is president.
But it's been a hoax. Everything's for 4 months. Now he's wearing a mask and he's saying Americans should wear masks. So what did 140,000 plus people die for? Right. We have this obsession in this country, this cult of toxic individuality in this country, and it is literally killing us. It is literally killing us. The smallest amount of social responsibility is like anathema to tens of millions of Americans. It's horrifying where we're at right now. I'm getting all worked up now.
I play happy rap music in between segments because you have to, like you said, and you know, like we started off, but like talking about like laughing and smiling through the pain. I mean, I had a conversation with somebody about like, what? That's where all my humor is just masking how horrified I am by the news.
Really crying on the inside.
It really is. It's so bad. And at this point, you know, I really relate mostly in my life to people that have like been through trauma and like have just kind of like dealt with a lot of shit in their life. It seems like a lot of my circle, you know, just people that I talk to and everybody, the people that I have the best conversations with are people that share stories about getting shit on, kind of. Yeah.
That's an underdog.
You should be able to laugh at it, though. You have to at least laugh because at least it's some coping mechanism. May not be the best. I don't know.
Oh, well, one more thing.
How do you deal with all this bad news?
I'm actually
happy all the time.
Yeah.
I want to ask Lark. She's really positive. Like, I mean, honestly, like when I talk to you, I mean, despite like you... You have a lot of the world views, you know, that we all have on the left and stuff like that, which is that this all sucks. But when I talk to you, you're always upbeat. You're like, yeah, do it. We can do it. I can build this. I'm going to make a new project. I'm going to put up a website. I'm going to do it. You got a million things going on. Like,
you have to. The only reason I do what I do is because I believe that we can change. I believe that another world is possible. And to me, if I can't believe that, then I can't convince anybody else of that.
Exactly.
And so it's not that I'm happy, but I know that if we gave people knowledge, okay, that's my hope. We gave people knowledge, they can do better. So But go ahead. You want to say something, Christian?
Oh, no, I just wanted to say really quick. I'm wearing my my Southpaw t-shirt today. Southpaw was a podcast I was on not too long ago. I just have to speak, talking about Trump and the rise of fascism. The host of that podcast, Sam, is a good guy. He's Korean. And he was walking his 18-month-year-old son in L.A. He was taking him for a walk, 18 months old. And a woman approached them, blamed them for the coronavirus, and spit at him and his 18-month-old son. Right. So when we think of the rise of fascism, it's not just over there. It's not just the government. It's also people in our everyday life that are giving in to the misinformation, the lies, the racism, and so on and so forth. So shout out to Sam.
All right. Yeah. So check him out. We got commercial music on, and then we're going to bring on Jessica Clayton, who I have a bit of an introduction for, but then I'm really going to turn it over because this is the part of the podcast I really like doing, which I get to sit back and do a lot of tech stuff and look at comments on Facebook and stuff while the experts take it away. And I couldn't think of a better expert to have than our co-host Lark this week. Lark has a website. You got to go to it and check it out. Called Sweet Potato Pie, www.mysweetpotatopie.com. And it's about Black children's poetry and short story journal. What Lark does, I mean, you can see it on the screen here. I mean, so much of what she does involves helping to educate children. She involves anti-racist work and just about everything as well. But this is just another project of hers. And I wanted to thank her so much for having her on and make sure that she gets some traffic to this project. You want to tell us about it there, comrade?
Well, it's one of the components of the project is media literacy. I'm meeting so many people who are able to be tricked and bamboozled by liars. I call them non-profiters. And I want to start educating people and showing them at a young age, because not only is it going to have poetry, but it's also going to have journalism. It's also going to have history. So people can start being educated and start being critical thinkers as young children, so that it'll be harder to manipulate them. Because right now, essentially every single one of the many major African-American groups are like, we need to get people working and in school. And I'm like, that's your advocacy? I'm like in shock right now. Like, are you serious? And I'm like, okay, clearly I can't help you. So I'm gonna help the children, and hopefully, you know, from there. So that's if you support that. I'm also doing in regards to that, I'm having a workshop. So just email me. I'll let you know.
What's the workshop about?
It's cooperative play.
I got one other sponsor. Don't worry about
it. It's cooperative play because I know some people, a lot of people giving these anti-racism workshops for children, and that is excellent. But now it seems as if neoliberals have weaponized anti-racism. So I'm just kind of like, we're going to work on cooperatives and how to cooperate and teaching children, you know, cooperative stories, cooperative games, how to, you know, set your house up, how to set your classroom up in a cooperative way. So we're not training children from, you know, from the time they're five to compete and someone has to lose. Everybody doesn't have to lose. But the thing is that people on the left oftentimes feel that, oh, well, they're just children, but people develop their peer views when they're like very little kids. Even kids as young as 6 months old, They listen to music that's related to their culture, they view it as positive. Music related to somebody else's culture, they view it as a negative thing. 6 months old, that's outrageous. So, you know, we can start shaping these kind of ideas for children now. And that's kind of like one of my goals. I have a manifesto called Another Childhood is Possible. I don't really like talking about my stuff so much on your show, but since you're forcing me.
We hope we're all we hope we have an audience that appreciates all that stuff, and I appreciate you giving some time to it. One more plug, of course, the August Agency does QuickBooks accounting and more. Small businesses, independent artists, if you do a little podcast like this, or you've got an independent art business, or if you're a performer or something like that, or if you're an activist group, whatever. Charlie at the August Agency is more than happy to help you. He sets up QuickBooks for you, keeps an eye on it for you, make sure you tag in things right. You know, like I always say, communists make horrible capitalists. So it does help to have a guy and a comrade around
who at least will deal with the money situation for you and help you manage it a little bit. He's a great service here to us at New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can reach him at 201-895-7227 or at www.theaugustagency.biz. Again, that's 201-895-7227 or www.theaugustagency.biz. You can see it scrolling there on the bottom of your screen. We're going to bring in our guest here, and I'm going to shut down the music. And I want to welcome Jessica Clayton from Red Bank, New Jersey. Hi, Jessica. How are you?
No, Brick.
Brick. I'm sorry.
Red Bank. Red Bank.
Red Bank, Brick. It's all Jersey.
We're
going
to get into a South Jersey argument that I don't need to be in right now. So let me just really plow right through this into the introduction. Jessica and I met through the Green Party. She's a member of the Ocean County Green Party down there.
Yes, I'm their secretary.
They've been active for a long time. They're one of the more active chapters, and I'm really proud. I think I had something to do with them getting started up like 5 or 6 years ago, and mm-hmm. I took off. I didn't do much. You know, I just like, hey, I have a Green Party, and they did that. Jessica is a member of the BRIC school board. Yeah. She's not representing them here tonight. She is representing herself, and she runs a child care center, which I'll let her tell you all about. So I'll just tell you about my experiences with Jessica. We're friends that run into each other like twice a year at these political events or whatever, and we chat every once in a while on Facebook when we like each other's status or something. But there's a profound respect, I think, at least I have, for Jessica, because she directly helped me with raising my children as she campaigned for the school board, and we came to know each other. Her campaign was based on making sure children can play. There were a lot of schools that were taking away recess and play for punishment, like you didn't show up at your homework or whatever. And Jessica ran and was educating, not just running on really, but educating parents and teachers and me, like sat down. I think we were drunk, but she did educate me. And she told me, like, you can't do this. And this is why it's so important, and taught me the importance of play and education. And not only did I have that education when I was in my school, I noticed that they were doing this. They were having this practice, and I said something to them and they stopped it. And it was really that simple. So I applaud, you know, the teacher and the administration that I talked to, because it was a very easy fix. It wasn't something I had to get arrested for and go scream at a city council meeting for. So, but it was because of her that my children have a better working environment in their own school. And I know that it spread to other towns. So I wanted to introduce you with that and thank you for everything you've done. And let you talk a little bit about your daycare center, and we're going to get into worker safety, in that place. But right now, you know, I did say that we'll let Lark kind of lead it, so I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this conversation. Thanks, Lark.
Thanks, Brian.
So, I mean, I guess I'm just going to kind of, you know, because you have an outdoor, but you're also the secretary of the Eastern Regional Association of Forest and Nature Schools, the recipient of the Year Wonder Award in 2017. I just want to acknowledge that, because I want people to take early childhood seriously. It's a serious field. It's actually, I feel like, the most important field. So thank you for the work that you do. So I'm just going to start off with the New York Times article about the outdoor, having school outdoors. And how do you feel about that? Just briefly, and then we'll move to other.
So I think it's really doable it depends. It's really doable in all ways until you get to 20 degree weather in the middle of winter. Mm-hmm. And, or if you're in Florida and right now it's 103 degrees and the humidity is really high. Mm-hmm. So you do have to think about how the weather is going to affect the learning, because there's Maslow, right? So if the kids are too hot or too cold, they're going to be thinking about those things and they're not going to be thinking about learning. What I do in early childhood is, and in my nature play school, is I get kids out for as much as I can. And I do that by making sure they're prepared for the weather. So as long as you're wearing the right clothes, and I think in the heat, you have to add in a water component, like misters and stuff like that, to really stay cool. Kids can really learn outside as long as you get them prepared. I think in older grades in public schools, it's sort of a harder thing to manage, because, you know, you have to say, can you send your kids in wool underwear? And, you know, not every every parent has access to woolen undergarments and snowsuits and all the gear that you need. And then you have to do fundraising in order to get that stuff on hand. So it gets, there's layers and there's complication, but in a small business like mine with a home daycare in New Jersey, the regulations say that I can only have 5 students a day. So I really only have to have 5, you know, items or, and I actually have like 8 students because there's part-time, but I have only have to have 8 pairs of galoshes and 8 snowsuits in order to get everyone prepared for the weather. So learning is way easier when you have the right clothes.
So that's, like I said, that's, I mean, to me, I feel like in a way you kind of really explained it in a great way that I taught for 10 years and I would find it extremely challenging. I taught special education preschool, and I was a actual program specialist, and I worked with people who had children, you know, autistic children. My sister is autistic. That would be extremely challenging to be outside and to be, and like you said, the weather, the computers, the situations, and you know, 30 kindergartners. So I think in a way you're making a really good point, like, oh, if we're a little preschool, yeah, I got like 5 people for 30 kindergartners. And then it's, and as you go down the socioeconomic ladder, fewer and fewer resources. So I'm going to say, let's see here. Why do you think, and the thing is that you have a preschool. So we're kind of talking on general terms or early childhood education. Why do you think there's been such a push? Now, the thing is, there are people who are going to have their children maybe with different homes or grandmas or something like that. But why do you think there's been such a push for institutional childcare, which isn't really even healthy? And that's not a preschool. Why do you think it's been such a push to get those, to get them open and to be open right now? Why do you think that is?
Well, so it's really interesting about opening, like, I think governor in New Jersey made an announcement like the end of May, May 30th, I think it was, that early childhood centers could open on June 15th. So we had like 2 weeks and to figure out what we were going to do. And they opened, clearly they opened us way before they're even considering opening the schools. So we had to come up with a plan, and interestingly enough, home daycares don't have any guidelines. I had to create them myself. In fact, I could have been open the whole time, but preschool,
yeah, preschool's different.
So preschools had, or centers had different rules. You had to be an essential center if you wanted to stay open the whole time. But all of us who decided to close could reopen on the 15th. But the thing is, if you didn't, there were just, all your competition was open. You had to reopen. You were forced. Your hand is forced. If I kept my school closed, what would have happened? My clients would have all found other childcare providers, and I would have not had anyone to, you know, come to my center. So on the June 15th, my hand was forced, and I had to do it. And I'm not sure why the governor decided that we needed to open so early, but I'm going to assume that it was so that people could get back to work.
That's outrageous. What Kristen wants to say something, but what I'm saying, that's out. Thank you for sharing that and being very honest, but Kristen, you have to say something.
So, I mean, there's a couple different reasons, but I want to talk about Trump and why Trump wants to reopen schools, right? Mm-hmm. Surprise. It's not because he cares about your kids.
What?
Trump needs a victory. He has failed with the pandemic. Again, 140,000 plus dead Americans. Our international standing is non-existent. We have stepped back as the worldwide leader. Trump needs a victory. Trump needs to get back to normal. That's when he wants to push getting back to normal. And if that means, well, I mean, 2 months ago, it was about sacrificing grandma. Remember? Old people don't care about dying, going back, whatever. Old people are magical. I don't know what the hell he was trying to say. Now he's ready to throw the children to the wolves. All so that he can say, things are back to normal. I solved the pandemic. Vote for me, right? Donald Trump does not care about grandma. Donald Trump does not care about little Billy. Donald Trump cares about getting reelected. And unfortunately, his supporters are the type of people, all they require is an image. These are the same people that see him go to North Korea and nothing happens. But they see that as a victory because something Trump is standing there next to Kim Jong-un. We didn't get anything from North Korea. Nothing like that happened. These are the same people who think tearing down a statue is getting rid of history. No, these are small-minded people, not critical thinkers. And for them, right, the 38% of this country that still supports Trump, sending kids back to school is a victory for them.
But you know, I have another question for Jessica now. Since we're both in early childhood, and we've been both been part of professional organizations, something that I've found, and the thing is, initially, I was kind of like, I was kind of swept up in the narrative, and they were like, we need, childcare is essential, it needs to get back to work. And I was like, when they gave that narrative, I was very much like, yeah, wait, that means we go back to work. Why do you think the people who are, I guess, our leadership advocacy organizations said that we need to go back to work for, and what was it? I don't want to answer for you, but what do you think the reason is behind that?
Like why they're saying that? Well, I guess they were trying to give us more power. I think they were trying to advocate for us. They just didn't realize that by saying we had to go back to work, they're putting us on the front line. You know, they didn't think about when we, when they put us, when they said like, oh, childcares are essential, childcares are needed, they should have more power, we should all, like, you need us. When they said you have to go back to work, what they said was, oh, you need us, so wear your mask and don't get sick.
And the thing is so funny, not funny, but the thing is so horrifying is that they all, it was all one drumbeat. All one, they at the same time, they had this thing, they're talking about anti-racism and equity. At the same time, they're sending in urban areas a very large Black, Latinx, and Indigenous population to die for $10 an hour. Preschool gets paid slightly more. Preschool workers make 28 and preschool 28,000 and child care gets 20. That's not saying like, oh, that you get paid a lot, that you're both pathetic. But
I got paid 19 when I was a teacher's aide.
Yeah. So it's very bad.
I'm a family child care provider. I make nothing.
Yeah. So I mean that's kind of the thing. It's like, you know, I kind of lost my point of my question, but why do you think that you have this anti-racism message come out? This, you know, moving towards equity statement coming out early childhood, and at the same time, does that seem to you like those values seem to be different? I mean, is it the same? Does it? I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think that they are thinking about how those things come together and what would it means for us to be working right now. You know, I mean, I think that when you look at the CDC guidelines for early childhood, and you look at, we have New Jersey guidelines for early childhood. If you believe that those standards are going to keep your teachers safe, then you can safely say, go back to work. But if, how can we know if those standards are really going to protect us until we do it? Yeah. You know, how many cases have we seen since like early childhood broke, you know, opened back up? I mean, we've seen the articles that say, in Texas and all of these different states that have been open, that the COVID is spreading through the daycare centers.
Yeah, so there's a couple of points I want to touch on. I mean, number one is we were getting the mixed information at first. At first, it was the virus wasn't hurting kids. At first, it wasn't hurting healthy people. So again, we have to look at the importance of information and the disaster of misinformation. Number two, there's something called the shock doctrine, right? While societies, cities, communities are in disarray, while, you know, usually after economic crises, environmental crises, natural disasters, there's usually a push by lawmakers to sneak in legislation that emboldens the already powerful. So draconian laws, a loosening of trade restrictions, and so on and so forth. Whenever this happens, particularly in a third world country, there's always something behind closed doors. Number three, I want to talk about was Trump and Murphy, that they kind of have different goals, different agendas, and sometimes they might align up, sometimes they won't, which is why I think that added to a lot of the confusion, right? Trump is trying to just push kids back into school. Murphy is more calculated, incredibly, significantly more intelligent than Donald Trump, and I honestly think is a lot more compassionate than Donald Trump. So he has his own worries as a governor. But, you know, at first, because of this misinformation, because at first we were told it wasn't affecting kids, Murphy originally is going to say, yeah, we got to get these kids back. But we didn't know that the reason the kids weren't getting sick was because they were pulled out. Right. And they were getting sick. We weren't getting told. And now we see Trump continuing to hide this information, which, again, I mean, I don't want to just say it's all Trump, because it's not just Trump. It's the GOP and weak liberals enabling him. But I mean, it all fits into this narrative of Trump trying to get reelected and trying to put up this facade that everything's OK. I mean, and that's the mark of a fascist.
Yes, that was definitely the mark of a fascist. I mean, he's clearly shown that in the last few weeks. But another point I want to bring up is, as we're both credentialed K-12 teachers, Jessica and I, even though she works in preschool and I worked
special. I taught it, but I wasn't credentialed.
But that's something I want to bring up, is that K-12, the teachers are saying, we're not going back. We're going to fight, and we're not going back. And in my own, and not only that, they're like, oh, I actually had, and she's my friend, she said, I'm going to hire a nanny, but I'm not going back to work. So why do we have these two, why do you think K-12, and I definitely feel that K-12 should fight. I'm not saying that they should definitely fight, but why is K-12 so separate from early childhood? And actually, you know, the thing is that in regards to the union and things like that, if childcare and preschool were actually part of their union, they would actually have a stronger case, because right now they're going to be like, childcare is open. So.
Yeah, you make a good point there. Absolutely. If we had come together, if we would come together and consider us all on the same team, on the same page, then we could definitely have a stronger voice. I have seen like memes that said, I'm not a babysitter, I'm a teacher, and then, so that belittles, early childhood educators like me. I mean, I'm not just a babysitter, I'm also an educator.
Literally, I mean, I'll have to say this, and I hate to like toot my own horn, but why was I essentially the only person saying, why is childcare working? I mean, I was making infographs, and I kind of thought, and I got people whispering to me on the side, like, thank you for like doing something. Why isn't anybody in leadership position? And I'm not pointing this on you, Jessica, this is across the nation. This is everybody. And this is a mindset. Why are people so afraid? Well, I kind of know why, but why do you, Kristen and Jessica, think that childcare in particular are so afraid to say anything? Or not afraid, I don't know what it is. How can I say it? People are afraid? I don't know what it is. No one's speaking up, but why?
I think Jessica could answer that question better than I can. I mean, in terms of leaders, don't expect political leaders who get funding from the same corporations that are pushing to reopen to have a critical response or any kind of argument against reopening, right? These are the politicians, the money that funds their campaigns is the same money that's pushing these schools and these businesses to reopen. In terms of leadership at schools, I mean, again, I would say it was that initial lack of information, right? Schools should be looking. I was talking about this with my wife, right? There are models out there for remote learning, right? I have a cousin that teaches ESL to students in Korea from Long Island, right? Mm-hmm. The models are out there for remote education. Not what we were doing in March, not when we were playing catch up and we were freaking out. Like, that's in the box. That was us reacting to a situation. But another model where we really take into consideration remote learning, that was never considered. And because we lost time, because schools were told, I think it was New Jersey, 5 weeks, you have to have a plan before you have to reopen. Instead of saying, look, we're not going to reopen. Nobody really banked on how bad it would get, because every time we think Trump or the GOP is going to get low, they sink a little bit lower. Right. So we kind of figured we would have this wrapped up magically by August. And now that we see that that's not the case, a lot of school districts are scrambling. And then you see colleges and universities not reopening. So why is, a university not opening, or LA or schools in Baltimore? Why are they not reopening, but these schools everywhere are? I mean, it's lack of information, lack of leadership. I keep beating that dead horse, or beating that horse. I don't want to beat horses, but I keep driving that point home, because I mean, the answers are out there. They're not like in the ether. We shouldn't be scratching our heads and running around. The answers are out there. We just have to pull them out and find them.
Well, some of the problem might be because early childhood educators are so underpaid. And we're running businesses. A lot of us are running small businesses. And to be fair, we're not business women or men. We are educators. And, you know, when it came time to close, some of us were struggling.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out how to keep our businesses open. I mean, I run a home daycare, so my overhead's a lot lower than someone who runs a childcare center. So
did you get a $1 billion handout?
They themselves may have been like, we need to open or we're gonna lose our business.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, should you guys have
gotten, isn't that scary?
Did you guys get a substantial, I heard that some people got some stipends or extra money and there were grants. I don't know if you got one, but were they substantial enough? Because from what I've seen and heard, they don't seem like they were that significant.
So I didn't get a grant, so I don't know. We were offered a small grant to get cleaning supplies, but you had to use your money to buy them first and then submit receipts, and you didn't know whether or not the receipts would be covered. Yeah. So that was what we were offered. And since I had a small business and I only had one employee, I was able to collect unemployment while I was closed. So I was okay. But like I said, a childcare center has a much huger overhead than I do. They have to pay their rent. They have to pay their insurance. They have to pay all of the things they were already paying. And without any income from their students, I mean, a lot of people closed.
Well,
these forgivable loans, I just want to like, because from the business end, for forgivable loans, the formula for it is your payroll times 2.5, your good faith estimated payroll times 2.5 on a catastrophe that's been going on in our country since mid-February. So the compensation, this is through that Paycheck Protection Act thing. So the compensation for a small business owner, somebody who, you know, trying to make payroll is a drop in the bucket, just like the $1,200 that we got as individuals. So but corporate America.
But it seems as if early childhood, and I think this is a thing that scares me. What keeps me up at night is that I know when this is all over, early childhood is going to have the highest death rates in regards to which educators died. Because they're number one, they don't have money. Number one, they're poor. They have to go from far away. A lot of them, they're going to have substantially higher death rates than anybody else in education. And even when I say, oh, well, should we have stipends? I'm still feeding into the narrative of we should be open. And is there any amount of money that's worth your life? I mean, that's a kind of a shitty question to ask you, but because I mean, it's like you're in the midst of it, you know. And I, you know, I'm aware that I have the privilege to kind of like sit here and, you know, I guess my service to the field is to continue to like beat the drum, like this is not fair, this is not fair, this is not fair. They should get like, they should be able to stay home. This is not fair, this is crap. When I see my K-12 teachers doing stuff, when I see my K-12 sisters doing stuff like, I'm not a babysitter. I'm like, well, so what? So like that woman doesn't count? Like, who are you talking about? Who is a babysitter? Who are you referring to? Because there's a racial tone to that. I mean, not so much for you with preschools, it's a little bit different, but for childcare, there's definitely a racial tone to, go ahead, Christian.
I'm sorry.
I'm the host.
No, I'm piggybacking on what you said, because what you said is incredibly important. Now, in my class, I have my students read an article. It's called Democracy and Care Unbound by Michelle Rossi. Mm-hmm. Okay, Democracy and Care Unbound. So what that article is about, it's about how historically, women in particular, I'm sorry, women in general and low income women of color, immigrant women in particular, have kind of been pushed to the wayside in terms of the labor movement. So at first, initially, you had men who kind of pushed women out of labor in order to collect a family wage. In the 60s, you have primarily white upper class women going to college. Right. So what happens? They go to college. They're able to break that glass ceiling, but they then turn around and hire more economically, poor women, usually poor women of color, to do their childcare. They can outsource childcare to someone else, right? So instead of rising up and lifting up, bringing these women up with them, they've basically relegated them to a second class position, which usually is women of color, immigrant women. You see a lot of these nannies, they're either like African American, Latino, or it's an au pair from like Eastern Europe or something like
that. Or Filipino also. I mean, that's the kind of thing, domestic help, we're left out of the Social Security Act in regards to union, like domestic help and the rural
agricultural workers.
Like rural in the field digging. Yes, agricultural workers were kind of left out. And then you have this weird situation where black women, indigenous women, and probably Mexican American and probably Puerto Rican, because this is a very specific group of people, could not qualify for aid for dependent children, could not get welfare. From like 1890 to like 1960, essentially, like if you were a white single mother, you could get a stipend from the government. And these black women, Chicano women, Puerto Rican women, indigenous women, who could not get these stipends. And then the whole working thing, I guess my whole point is, I also know, and this is not for the small places like you, Jessica. I'm not talking about independent. I'm talking about stuff like Bright Star, KinderCare. Mm-hmm. A lot of these women who are on welfare, on these work programs, they are being forced to work in childcare agencies. And those childcare agencies are getting tax credits for them. So that's another, if that's the whole thing I think is kind of funny. It's like, especially in a lot of our leading organizations, we think that they're fighting for people like you, Jessica, but actually they're fighting for KinderCare because they need to stay open because they get their little cash. They're not paying those women and they're like getting the tax write. So people talk about the prison industrial complex. I'm like, hey, there's another complex. There's the employment or welfare industrial complex, which is almost like the same thing in regards to this free labor. And I'm talking way too much. I was going to ask you one more thing. Do you think in childcare, because I think in K-12, they're already planning for the when, not if scenario. When do you think childcare, early childhood education, will start planning for the when and not if? Because I fear in November, everything's gonna close back up. So what do you think we can do to support you? Or do you agree with that? Or think people are figuring out now? Because now people gotta know, you gotta know now, right? So.
I don't know. I mean, I have to say, I don't know. I mean, I hear from childcare work, like other childcare providers who are happy to be open, to stay open, to be around the kids. They want some level of normalcy from their own perspective, like from their own routine. And they are on the other side of the argument too. And I hear from people who are scared, you know, who are, you know, wearing their mask and their face guards and they're worried about the parents bringing germs into their home. And it's just like the country is divided. So are the members of the childcare industry. And I don't know if there's going to be like this massive, movement of us to come together and make a decision together again, because I doubt we will. I think that we will all make our own individual decisions. I mean, this is the thing that home daycare providers like me are so small that like in New Jersey, we're barely regulated. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's like that in other states as well. I mean, and then when you get to the child care centers, there's another layer of like authority given to them. And then they have even a layer of regulations lower than the public school, which gets even more a bigger layer of regulations. And I've heard the argument that it's because child care centers are bigger and home daycare providers are smaller. So our exposure rates are lower. I mean, so they keep making these rules based on these cohorts, how big your group is. So in home daycare, your group is in New Jersey, it's 5. And in other states, it can be up to 20, but it's not 40 or 100 or, you know, in a public school, it could be 5,000 kids in one building. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of people take the idea that if small groups are okay, then we should be allowed to open.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on. And as always, I always wish I could like just hang out with my comrades for hours on that. I really miss, I honestly, Jess, we probably missed one or two events where we could have gotten drunk together. And I know we're going to have to do it, make it up after. I heard some vaccine news come out today. And I know that, it doesn't really mean anything. They basically just gave a couple of corporations like billions of dollars. And maybe they'll produce a vaccine. Maybe they won't. I'm pretty sure they're going to get paid either way, but look, I really do appreciate you coming on and us at least being able to see each other on the show here. I know you're very, very busy. You got a family and all this going on. So I appreciate you taking some time out and being with us here tonight. I also want to thank Christian for being here tonight. And before we go, of course, we want to make sure we get a few last words in so we can know while we play a little bit of music in the background, if I can figure out how to get there, it is right there. Play a little Infinite Skills in the background. All right. Christian, why don't you let us know what's going on in your life? How can you find you? Got any podcasts? Yeah,
you can find me. You can find me on Twitter at Perez Podcast. I started going on Twitter again. I really wasn't that good at it, but I'm on Twitter. As always, you can find me on Facebook, Modernity Absurdity. Podcast is available on Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, wherever they're available. One last thing. I want to say rest in peace to Michael Brooks. He was a great thinker, a great political communicator, and just a great intellectual. His book, Against the Web, is must reading. His death came as a shock to me, and it hit me very hard. So shout out to him and his family. Thanks again for having me. Once again, Christian Perez, Modernity and Absurdity Podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming. We always love having you on. Jessica, plug your business. And you got anything else going on? You got any activist? I don't know a lot about your business. Anything going on in the world of your activist life?
I have not really. I've been going. As an activist, all I went to was a bunch of Black Lives Matter rallies in the past. That's it. For my business is full. You know, there's a lot of people looking for daycare right now. So that's cool. I can't plug that, but I always like to plug my Facebook group, Nature Preschool Ideas and Community. It's for the Eastern Region Association of Forest and Nature Schools. And I know a lot of schools are looking to find out how to do outdoor education, and it's a great resource, the nonprofit and the Facebook page. So check it out.
And I go to it all the time. So it's a really good page. I take from it all the time.
Thank you.
Lark. It's been a fun month. I'm gonna miss working with you, but you know, it doesn't mean we're not gonna work together more and more and more. I'm sure at some point we'll be able to do this again. And thank you for all your contributions over the years from New Jersey Revolution. It's been 2 years. You've been blogging.
Yeah, wow.
Go on our website and just search Lark. Her work and her just her, which I have more respect for than most people on the face of this earth. This is there. Follow her on Facebook. Follow her activity and please support independent media. Lark, tell us specifically though how they can do that.
Okay, well you can find me on Facebook at Tika Lark. I'm right there. You can find me on Twitter at Black Kid Lit. I write under various names to protect the guilty and to stay my many different various, to keep things separate. Then I don't have to say anything. I have to say I'm not part of this because that's not the same person, and I'm a twin.
You're like I said, you're a spaghetti at the wall kind of organizer, and those that work with me know that I'm like that too. I like to throw a lot of ideas out there, and you see what people latch onto, and that's what you fly with, so... it's great stuff. So I thank everybody for hanging out. We're going to listen to On My Grind by Infinite Skills on the way out. And then we're going to wrap it up. We'll be back next week, though, 8 p.m. on YouTube or Twitter or Facebook, Spotify, iTunes, all that kind of stuff. Our show writer, Leah, will be cranking out this episode. So it'll be out on the podcast the next day. And that's thanks to your contributions. We can't do that unless we have writers and people that put things up on the website and all that stuff. We're all busy people. So we have Leah to do that. We want to thank her. You can contribute at www.njrevolutionradio.com. This is Infinite Skills on My Grind. Thanks a lot. See you next week, everybody. This is Brian Powers reminding everybody the police can quit their jobs. Good night.
day after you gave me the beat, huh? And the hook. This is how I'm working these days. I'm slaying newsprint to keep gas in my Ford. Can't relate to a song filled with things I can't afford. The music I produce can change a mood, but when you get on the track, I change the tune. If you get airplay, you owe the DJ a favor, but they be calling me when they need some new flavor. I get beats imported from North of Yonkers and spit bars that all beyond bonkers. Considered a rookie, but that's just a label. I diversify my bars so my stacks gonna be stable. They trying to joke me, but no one's gonna be able. I feel like a buffet. I got so much on my table in the daytime. I write news for TV. When night falls, some of y'all can see me on the sidelines getting my reporter on. In the studio getting my reporting on.
I'm on my grind. I'm on my grind. I'm on my grind.
Dedication of a Muslim on jihad. No, I got the dedication of my brother Gerard. The youngest of the three, but came first in education. Now he's about to go to school to learn medication. There'll be no hesitation from here on out. So all the haters in my way, just clear on out. I'm like Mike Tyson before Robin Givens. Young bull in the game full of red ribbons. Dangerous like running on thin ice with scissors. Flow so cold, I gave the North Pole shivers. Rap part-time, but I spit like I live this. You think I wear suits? The way I handle my business. Wreck through the track so you know that it's serious. But it's hard making noise when nobody's hearing us. I see other crews making it, though I'm not jealous. You can't tell us, they can match my acapellas.
I'm on my grind. I'm on my grind. I'm on my grind.
This trick like repeat sex. Y'all need me in rec, but we need them checks. I'm done eating potatoes, it's gravy time. Been a whole lot of dues, I paid me mine. You can try to stop us if you want, but we ain't never gon' punt. That's like me buying diamond fronts. And I'm not the type of brother that stunts. Money ain't bad, it's what you do with it. And y'all be running out to buy some jewels with it. It's a waste if you just gon' act a fool with it. Why not try to make some moves with it? No mouths to feed besides my own, but I got a stack of bills that's overgrown. And someday I would like to own a home, so I've been on my grind since I got my shoulders sewn.
I'm on my grind. 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 I'm on my grind.
Take this opportunity to apologize. I know some of y'all been getting a little heated because I don't hang out as much. But you gotta understand, this is high stakes, baby. Success comes for those that work for it. I ain't forget about y'all.